Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM. And all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come, and everything under the sun is in view, but the sun is eclipsed by the moon.
Hello and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John.
Good evening, Ben, and hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone. Indeed, as ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. You can also catch us live on the internet, dublincityfm.ie, and also as a podcast. But first, as usual, what to see in the sky over the coming week.
Yeah, start with Mercury. It's quite bright at the moment, strangely enough. -0.2 now. Because it's small, it's not really, really bright. But it is good compared to Mars, which is +1.5. It's a little bit bigger. But Mercury is very low in the bright after the glow of the afterglow of sunset. They're in conjunction 18th and 19th, and that's in 3 or 4 days' time, as shown in our skies. So -0.2 for Mercury and Mars, +1.5. Venus, -3.9. It's a good one to see. Rises just before the beginning of dawn. Watch for it to come up due east. The thin waning crescent moon accompanies it on the morning of the 19th. It's been nice to see the sky. So it's been sort of muggy and murky over the last number of days. Jupiter, on the other hand, -2.2, it's pretty good. It's in Gemini just at the moment, beside Castor and Pollux. Easy to recognise. It's quite high in the sky. But in the beginning of dawn, the three stand very high in the south with one called Procyon. Don't really know that one, do you, Ben?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's below to just find it. And of course, we know where Orion is standing upright farther to their lower right. Yep, that's perfect because now we know where I am. Saturn, +0.8. It's up in the east southeast as night falls. So again, there's nothing really much up there at the moment in the normal skies, as we would call it. It climbs through the evening, spotted lower at the right of this great square of Pegasus in the early evening, and directly below the square by the time Saturn transit around 11 p.m. And at the moment, Saturn is a weird one. I'm not a great fan. I like to see the angle on, but it's nice to also see the edge on, and that's where it is at the moment. So the Saturn's rings remain nearly edge on to us just at the moment.
About 1 degree off. Yeah. Edge on. I think if they were exactly on, I don't think you probably wouldn't see them, because as you know yourself, they're not very thick. It's only a couple of metres, or a couple of tens of metres.
3 to 10 metres, that's about it. You might get the odd little speckle out a little bit further when they bash against each other, all the ice crystals and everything else. But hey, John, it's a good thing to see if you haven't seen it. If you have a telescope or a good pair of binoculars, you might get a good chance. Uranus and Neptune, on the other hand, these are two little sort of elusive planets, magnitude 5.6 for Uranus. It's in Taurus. It's, I suppose it's quite easy to see if you can get there, because you know where the Pleiades cluster is. It's well up by 9 or 10 p.m., so you will find Uranus quite easy with a high-power telescope. It's still tiny, but definitely non-stellar, as a little dot, 3.6 arc seconds wide. And Neptune, the last one, still calling the telescopic star of magnitude 7.8. So you really do need to see and use a telescope to see the dim pinhead, just 2.4 arc seconds wide, a few degrees from Saturn. So they are, if you want to go hunting for them, they are available in our skies. And quite nice to see as well. So I suppose Jupiter really is the one, with Castor and Pollux and Gemini and Orion as well. And Betelgeuse, I like Betelgeuse.
And Venus, and you mentioned Venus and the Moon on Sunday the 19th. Mm-hmm. Of course, hard to miss either of them, but if you're in any doubt, and you do have a clear sky on Sunday the 19th, that's Venus. It's about 5 3/4 degrees to the lower left of the Moon, but basically the other brightest object in the sky, besides the moon at that stage. And at Monday, next Monday and Tuesday, the Orionids peak.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You may have some details on that.
They've been in our skies since the end of September, to be quite honest, but not at any intensity. So the 20th and the 21st are the two dates to watch for those, sort of midnight into the early hours of the morning, until it gets bright, so you get to see that as well. And similarly, Taurid meteor showers around as well. And you'll only get to see about 5 meteors per hour on that one, which is not really good, but still nice to see one every now and again. And I love to see those glows streaking across the skies as well.
Indeed. So. And the International Space Station begins a series of morning passes from Friday the 17th. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you're up at 6:50 a.m., just 10 minutes to 7 in the morning on Friday, you will see it. Clear skies permitting, of course. Speaking of the moon, at the moment we have a 39% waning crescent moon. It's not currently on view because it did set about 3 hours ago, but it will rise in the early hours of tomorrow morning, just after midnight tonight, at 22 minutes past midnight, and it will be due south, that's at its highest, at 8:48 a.m. tomorrow, and when it sets tomorrow evening at 4:51 p.m., it will be down to a 30% waning crescent phase as we head towards the new moon, which will be on Monday the 21st. Meanwhile, the sun rises in Dublin tomorrow. That's Wednesday the 15th. That's at 7:52 a.m., a whole 13 minutes later than a week ago. You can see the mornings closing in as well as the evenings and local noon. That's when the sun will be due south and at its highest. That's at 10 minutes past 1 tomorrow afternoon, and the sun will set at 6:28 p.m., a whole 16 minutes earlier than a week ago. And then we'll have various shades of twilight until 8:24 p.m., when astronomical twilight will end and astronomical night will begin. So tomorrow we'll have 4 minutes and 6 seconds less daylight than today, when there'll be 11 hours and 5 minutes between sunrise and sunset, and a whole 29 minutes less daylight than a week ago.
Remarkable. Then a couple of weeks' time, we're really going to suffer when that hour goes.
And the clocks go back at the end of the month.
Yes, indeed it does. Just a little bit more information about the Orion meteor shower. And most would probably know that it belongs to a comet called Halley's Comet.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, this is the sort of the debris that we go through. Now, we saw that, it was in the mid-90s.
Eighty-six.
And
it wasn't a good pass.
No, it wasn't. But it was seen.
And I didn't see it. Mm. I was up at Dunsink that day, day, and there was long queues, and it was because it was very low down in the sky, and just as I got to the eyepiece, when my turn eventually came, the clouds rolled in and I didn't see it at all. Yeah. However, was it in the 90s then, the late 90s? Oh, Hayakitake, and then, of course,
Hale Bop was a good one, yeah. That was straight outside our front door at the time.
You couldn't miss it.
No.
Couldn't miss it.
It was really good. And this is meteors are the things that we pass through the tail or the dust that come and are left behind by Halley's Comet, and it's a nice one to see, but it won't be back to us for another 300 odd years or thereabouts.
Halley's Comet comes around every 76 years, I believe. It was around in 1910. I don't remember that one.
No.
So that's why it came around again in 1986. Mm-hmm. So do the maths there.
Yeah, do the
86
maths,
and 76 is 2.
No, we're not going to see. 16. Definitely not.
2062.
Yeah,
20. No, did I get that right? Yeah, 16. 12. 16. Yeah, 2062.
Here's hoping.
I'm not going to make 2062. I'm very surprised.
Yeah. So just keep the dates.
The oldest
in mind.
Man ever, if I make that one.
There you go. Yeah, the.
Well, not quite actually.
October.
What am I talking about?
Yeah, October.
I want to be 100 in my early hundreds.
At It'll be okay. I think we'll go for it anyway, see if we can make it. October the 20th and 21st, but they have been in around, so it's a big, big tale from September the 26th, and they will last until November the 7th. You have a good chance of seeing a few of these. I'm not exactly sure how many meters you would see per hour on this one, but it's worth it, and it's one of the favourite meteor showers that you get. There's also another one, just also produced by Comet Halley, or Halley, if you want to call it that, and it's I can't remember the name of it now. Yeah, so these things float through the sky, but 66 kilometers per second. It's remarkable the speeds that they do. So there are two comets, one in May, and I can't remember the name of that one just off the top of my head. So there we go. Oh, there it is, the Eta Aquarius. That was it, yeah. That was on the tip of my tongue. So it was also produced with the dust left by Halley's 1P, Halley's Comet, more commonly known to us as Halley's Comet, yeah.
Thank you, John. Now, NASA say they are on track with regard to their moonshots and the Artemis 2. It was actually last month they said they were on track to send astronauts to orbit the moon in early 2026. There's what we call a second space race on, it appears, to get to the moon. As you know, the first one was between the United States and the Soviet Union, and of course the United States got there first, but this time around it's a race between the United States to get back and China to get there. Now China are planning, they say they'll be there by 2030, and next mission up for Artemis, which is the Artemis, of course, was the twin sister of Apollo, so it's well named, that program. Anyway, Artemis 2 is scheduled for launch in April of next year at the latest, and could come as soon as February, so I'm really looking forward to that. There'll be three US astronauts and one Canadian astronaut on board, and would you believe it, that'll be the first time people will have been as far away as the moon in more than 50 years. Oh, amazing. Of course, they're not going to land on the moon. The plan is that Artemis 3 will do that, and again, the plan is for Artemis and the U.S. Space Agency to land people back on the moon by 2030 at the latest. But we'll see about that, I suppose. And then, of course, they also want to go on to Mars with this second space race. And, of course, more geopolitical, I suppose. Yes. Mostly political, isn't it, when you want to get... But they say there, of course, their main thing is to get there safely. Better to do it safely and be extra sure that no disaster is going to happen, rather than get there first and have a disaster. I was listening, as I mentioned before, about a podcast, I think it was a BBC one, BBC World Service, 13 Minutes to the Moon it was called, but it was... When you read up about the Apollo missions and listen to the podcast, it seems like it was nothing short of a miracle that they didn't actually lose a crew. They were expecting, they had kind of built into the calculations that they had maybe 1 in 3 chance of losing a crew. That's one of the reasons why after Apollo 17 was the last landing on the moon. There was a plan for Apollo 18, 19 and 20. But the money, the expense of it, and then there was the risk of losing a crew as well, and as well as that apparent public interest had died down.
We've done that four or five times before. Mm-hmm. What's next?
That type of thing.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway, I thought I was quids in last night. Went out to the back door at about 8:30, looked up north as I usually do. We're up high as far as I can see, cloudy as usual. Saw this orangey glow, and looked over a little bit further right, there was a greeny glow. And I said, I had read recently that there some aurora might be around, but unfortunately these weren't anything like that. This was just the village lights lighting up the underside of the clouds, and you look towards the airport and you got this really red glow, and I said, that's not really in the right position for aurora from where we are. And there's no need for the red alert, but I did think it was in Quidsian, because we did get a good view was it last this time last year thereabouts an aurora as well, and some lovely photographs to boot. There was a mysterious reddish pink glow which appeared in the night sky over Dublin Airport yesterday. In fact, it was not the Northern Lights. The sight was nothing more than greenhouse lamps used by a fruit farm at the back of Swords, and they know it as the Aurora Borealis, which is really clever. Yeah, there you go. The photo of the glow was shared, and I got a photo as well, so it definitely was a reddish glow, and what it did was it shone up against the underside of the clouds to produce that red glow, which unfortunately was not the aurora.
Well, it just goes to show, too, that the issue with light pollution, all that energy and light going up into the sky just being wasted. Costs money, and there's an ecological factor involved there as well. But we'll get back to that subject another time. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and Ben Emmett, and our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. We'd love to hear from you, and you can catch us live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie. And also as a podcast.
Yeah, we'll go just back to, I suppose, the Northern Lights or the Aurora just for a moment. And as we know, the sun has just about passed its maximum at the moment. And they do say for the next 2 years, the sun enters a turbulent decline with a last gasp finale.
This is the sunspots?
This is the sunspots. Ones that you can see through your nice sun arcanos. It's fantastic to look through those.
Yeah.
And, I had a visit from Mr. Ben one evening, and he says, come here, can I have a look at this? This was what, earlier on in the year. And it was a big, big sunspot.
Huge conglomeration of sunspots, yes.
Yeah, so we may just have passed the peak of the solar maximum, but that doesn't mean you're not going to see. Or the season is winding down. In fact, the years after the solar maximum can be some of the most exciting for sky watchers. I've noticed this before.
That's true, Jim. Yeah. But do you remember the massive aurora display we had at Halloween? And when was it now? Was it the late 90s? I'm not sure when. I think it was the late... mid to late noughties, I think. And... but it was 2 or 3 years after solar maximum, so not a time you'd expect a massive aurora. But yeah, we could be lucky. All we need is a clear sky, of course, we need the sunspot to explode, and while it's pointing in our direction, and also clear skies 2 or 3 days later when it gets here.
Yeah, I went to Iceland and Norway at the solar minimum, but I did get to see something light. It wasn't terribly brilliant, but should probably have picked another couple of weeks difference, because the moon was quite bright that night as well. I made a slight miscalculation, but it was coming up to Christmas time, so we didn't really have an option on that. So sun has an 11-year rhythm, and where the inside of it and the outside run at different speeds, it sort of catches up, produces all sorts of stuff and sunspots. And the solar maximum, of course, which we're just easing towards the end of now. So if you're still there and we get a clear night, which we haven't really had in the last while, which is a pity, unless we're looking for strawberry greenhouse lights under the atoms of the clouds.
Aurora Borealis?
Aurora Borealis.
Very good. Now, I see yesterday that SpaceX had another successful Starship rocket launch. That's the second in a row. It was the 11th test voyage, and it took off. It's actually the early hours of this morning here, just after midnight last night. The rocket booster is known as the Super Heavy. That landed in the Gulf of Mexico as planned, and the upper stage, also known individually as Starship, that cruised through space, ran through some tests, launched some mock satellites, apparently, and it was similar to the last successful mission. That Starship then basically came back into the orbit decayed and crashed into the Indian Ocean as planned and was not recovered, but it wasn't planned to recover it. Now, this mammoth starship, it's the world's largest and most powerful rocket, and it is planned to use it to in returning astronauts to the moon, and also, of course, Mr. Musk's plan to take people to Mars as well. And also, that test mission yesterday was expected to be the last for that type of starship prototype, and the next flight will be a new model, a version 3. So they're claiming they're having some great wins, but of course, if you remember, the 3 test flights before that were disastrous. They exploded at some stage or other. In fact, one of them exploded on the ground. Well, that was an engine fire test, but it wasn't planned, of course, to explode while they were doing the test. So I suppose things are improving, and they've had some successes. But just going back to the Artemis 3 mission, which is the planned landing on the moon in mid-2027. I see the former NASA administrator said that it is highly unlikely the United States will beat China's projected timeline, which is China said they're going to get there by 2030. But the acting administrator of NASA says, no, they're still in the race, and he basically dismissed the notion that China were going to be there first. So, wait and see, I suppose.
Yeah, now, one of the biggest problems that we have is, I suppose, asteroids, and if there is one with our name on it. So we had one last week, this time last week, in fact it was last Wednesday, there was an asteroid near Earth detected hours after it passed the planet. This is where the problem is. We didn't.
It's already gone past.
Yeah, it's gone past. This particular one was 3 meters wide, and it was picked up on the radar last Wednesday by 265 miles above Earth over Antarctica, near Earth's most southern point at an altitude similar to that of the ISS, which is a little bit scary.
That's very,
as well.
Very close.
Yeah, but I suppose with 10-foot wide one or a 3-meter wide asteroid, it'll still do a little bit of damage.
Oh, yeah. You don't want that coming down in the middle of the town you live in.
Yeah, and they missed it, unfortunately. Well, they didn't detect it until later, but they said there was no threat at all to us, but there are probably some bigger ones looming out there somewhere with our name on it, because they say roughly every 100 years we get a big one. Last one, I think, was the Tunguska, one in Siberia.
1908.
Yeah. By a fellow walking his dog. Flattened 1 million trees. That just shows the power of these things. Chelyabinsk, I think, was probably the most recent one.
The most recent, yeah.
Yeah, and it did a little bit of damage as well, knocking out windows and...
Mm-hmm. I think there were 1,000 people injured, mostly from flying glass. Was there basically the pressure wave as it came through. People on the inside of a building looking at it out the window, and of course...
Yep.
Then the pressure wave came and smashed a lot of glass. A lot of people suffered a lot of cuts. Speaking of Mr. Musk and his reusable rockets, now I see the ESA, the European Space Agency, they're saying, now we've got to get a move on and develop one for ourselves, meaning Europe. I know they've just upgraded their Ariane rockets. The first flight, I think, of the Ariane 6 was back last year, but that's not a reusable rocket. And they said, we really got to catch up fast, but we're on the right path. And that's ESA. They announced they have a shortlist of 5 European aerospace companies bidding to build the first reusable rocket launch system. And they're going to cut that down to 1 or 2 by the end of next month. And they say the new Ariane 6, it's excellent rocket. It's very precise. And we've now had 3 launches, and they're expecting to do some more before the end of the year. But the point, I suppose, is they say when Ariane 6 was being designed, the plan, the reusable rocket was not kind of an option at the time. Worth the time and the extra expense. But of course, with SpaceX and those Falcon 9 boosters that can be used multiple times, that they have brought down the cost of space flight. So Europe needs to get back in the game, especially now that it's become a more commercialised field, rocket launches, and if they want to be in with the shout of, I suppose, making some money and making the programme pay for itself, then Europe's going to start designing its own reusable rockets.
Yeah, you touched last week on the subject of lunar soil being melted into construction bricks. Now, this is from the Chinese... the Chinese Deep Space Exploration Laboratory, the Diesel, D-S-E-L, Diesel, that's good. The machine concentrates sunlight using a parabolic reflector, I suppose like a big magnifying glass, transmitting the energy through the fiber optic bundle, and at the output end, the solar flux can reach over 3,000 times the normal intensity, producing temperatures of above 1,300 degrees Celsius. And these conditions allow the lunar regolith to melt, and they've just tested this, and it seemingly works. So it's quite an interesting subject if you're interested in lunar soil bricks, which is probably the way forward for... it's a piece of bag of cement, really, doesn't it?
I think the idea is you just... Yeah, a big just magnifying melt. Glass, yeah. And you just put so much energy into it that they fuse them. You essentially weld all those bits of grit and sand together into a brick. And, of course, they'll be needed for if people are going to stay on the moon for any length of time. Now, I see that some astronomers have detected the lowest mass dark object yet found in the universe, and they're not sure what it is. It could be a very small galaxy. It does have the mass of about 1 million times that of the Sun, but it could be a small... That would be a very small galaxy now, if it had only that amount of mass, or they think maybe it could be a failed star or something like that. But, of course, they discovered this through gravitational lensing, but it is quite small, and... Essentially, they used a lot of telescopes on Earth, like in interferometry type, on the big one in Australia and the ones in Chile and around the world. So basically, you had effectively a telescope that was kind of the width of the Earth. But they're wondering now what it is. Could it be a blob of dark matter on its own? Normally, we associate dark matter with galaxies and... star clusters and such things, but could it be out there on its own? Last week, John, when you weren't here, I did touch on things like dark matter. There was a study done recently, and some people come up with the idea maybe we don't need dark matter or dark energy to explain some of the things that happen in the universe, that we like the rotation of galaxies, why they don't fly apart, and to explain that, of course, somebody came up with the idea, well, there must be some other force, gravitational force, holding them together and such like. But the essential gist of this story was that these astronomers maybe said, well, maybe the forces of nature, they're not the same now as they were. They can be weaker or stronger, and maybe gravity was stronger in the past than it is now. And that's why, if you look back, especially when you're looking out onto hundreds of light years away or a billion light years into the distance, so you're looking at something a billion years ago, and maybe the forces of gravity were greater then than they are now, and that would explain why the galaxy is holding together and not spinning apart, and maybe we don't need dark energy and dark matter. And that could be the reason why we've never discovered, despite all the efforts to detect dark matter.
Yeah.
It has not been detected.
Mind.
But the jury's still out on that one, and we'll see about that one.
Anyway, just before we go, huge winds seemingly up on Mars on the surface, and there have been about 50,000 satellite images taken of dust devils, and these can reach the speeds of 160 kilometres per hour or 44 metres per second, even though the atmosphere is very, very thin up there. So there we go. That, unfortunately, is it for this evening.
Thank you, John, for your news items and for driving the sound desk. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, from this edition of The Astronomy Show. Now it's music all the way here on 103.2 Dublin City FM all the way until 2 a.m. because up next we have Dublin's greatest hits. And from 10 p.m. to midnight, Nigel Wood has his ear to the globe with his world of music mix. And from midnight till 2 a.m., Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul with a program called After Hours. But please join myself and John at the same time, 7:30 p.m. next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from all corners and dimensions of the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening and say good night, John.
Good night, John.
Good night, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.